One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Good afternoon. A very warm welcome to you from all of the team here at AusBiz. You are just in time for the call. So 10 stocks picked by you, a stock of the day, two expert guests over the course of an hour. You know the routine. On today's show, here for the full hour, joining me is Joshua Barker, who's joining us from RiverX. Hey, Josh. And really pleased to welcome back to the program, Chris McDonald from Morgan's Financial.
Good to see you.
How are you?
Very well.
Good. How are you feeling about the market these days? Feels as if it wants to keep going a little bit higher.
It does want to go higher. And I think we've seen in the last week, there was a lot of threats around, a lot of fear for the first time in a while, everything about inflation, bond yields, Middle East problems. And yet we seem to be climbing that wall of worry. We got bit of a relief out of the RBA yesterday that there aren't imminent rate hikes and they think inflation will turn back to trend and into their target range by the end of next year. And I think hopefully next week we'll get a fairly benign inflation print out of the US. So we might get a little bit more juice from that.
Yeah. And also, Josh, I mean, if you just even take the megatech names in the United States, like everything's going swimmingly as far as earnings go on that front.
Yeah, had more, pretty strong earnings backdrop to sort of hold up the market while the bond market was a bit worried about an extra couple of rate hikes coming, but seems to be quelled by the central banks here and over there. So I think the markets and valuations are just going to hold up for the time being, and then when we finally do see those rate cuts come through, it's going to be positive.
Okay, so that is the backdrop for this conversation. Two blokes here who seem as if they're mildly optimistic about what's to come for equities this year. We'll find out if that applies to any of these companies coming up. We will be talking about Telstra, Evolution, and if you've caught the most recent edition of the investment committee, you'll know that Evolution was a sell. Silex Systems, Eleanor Investors Group, which I'll admit I don't know very much about, and Camplify. So one of those companies that has been looked upon as a growth story. But again, that was kicked out of the AusBiz Fantasy portfolio a couple months ago, just going by memory. But the stock of the day is Aussie Broadband, because we have been getting a bit of news flow from companies this week, some coming from the Quarry Conference, some these quarterly trading updates. And shares in ABB are taking a bit of a dip today. That's despite the company reporting it's added close to 19,000 broadband services in the quarter. The quarter also saw Aussie Broadband successfully complete the acquisition of Symbio. It's also reaffirmed its upgraded FY24 earnings guidance for between $105 and $110 million. So shares are sitting at $3.90, down by close to 0.9%. So let me go to my guests here, Joshua and Chris on ABB. Josh, I'll go to you first. You thought this might tie in nicely with Telstra.
Yeah.
But let's start with ABB, because this has, been a well-performing company. Mm. Bit of a, couple of months ago, last month.
Yeah.
A bit of a contract loss with Origin and also, Superloop, all of that going on. But I mean, fundamentally, this company seems to be doing quite well.
Yeah, long term we like it. It's obviously had a great track record of delivering shareholder wealth, being a dollar IPO, not that long ago realistically, and it's had a little bit of turbulence, but it's really holding up well on its own now. They're growing revenues really strongly. I think 17% was the last print, adding to that NBN market share as well. So they had about 8.5% of the NBN currently, but I think that's got a lot of upside. I think here in Australia, we like to only have a few players in each sector, with the supermarkets and airlines, and telcos are actually an example of that, and broadband services. So they've got a lot of room to grow. They're growing faster than their competitors and picking up market share too. Interestingly enough, with today, we've had a lot of turbulence with that Superloop takeover, but basically they accumulated shares, put in a takeover offer at a higher price, and then were forced to sell at that higher price, and you know, I guess accidentally made $13 million profit on that trade. So whilst it's a bit of frustrating that they weren't able to acquire that asset, a bit of a silver lining there for an investment into the shares anyway. So yeah, like I said, they're in an upgrade guidance. They've reaffirmed that. We like companies in an upgraded guidance. We've been accumulating it over the last week or so, and would be happy to continue to accumulate it.
Interesting. All right. So accumulation mode there for ABB. Mm-hmm. Are you as positive?
I am. It's in the naughty corner for the way they butchered that attempted takeover of Superloop, but you've got to give them a little bit of a pass, Mark. They've got a great track record. Two pieces I like about this business: the backdrop, first of all, they're gaining market share, which is important to note. They're probably a bit of a beneficiary from Optus and their trials and tribulations in the last few years and the excessive pricing, you could argue, with Telstra as well. But maintaining an upgraded guidance is what we want to see in customer satisfaction. They continue to win those awards, so retention will be high as well.
Yeah, so is that a buy today?
Happy to buy today. I think it's probably a $5 price target if you're willing to wait for 18 months, and that's not a bad return from where we are today.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that is a double buy to start this Wednesday edition of the program. I like it. I like it so far, and the brokers like this one too. Ords has upgraded it to a buy. That was back in March, and did Morgan Stanley upgrade ABB to overweight from underweight back in March. So I'm sure some of the analysts will be weighing in after the trading update today. So there you go, positive start. See what happens with Telstra then. Because we can sort of dovetail this one off the back of ABB. This has been picked by Jeff. Hey, Jeff, hope you're watching or listening. We've got Chris McDonald from Morgan's here to answer your question on Telstra. I don't have any context for this, Chris, but you know, if we think about, you know, telcos, and we think about where we are in terms of interest rates, you know, is this sort of, traditionally it's always been looked at as a defensive play. Is that what it is?
It is, but we've seen now three or four different CEOs come in with all this promise, we're going to revolutionize and change. They generally do one thing right, two things wrong, and leave for the next person to pick up the mess. We're seeing that again with Telstra. It's a very mature business. They probably didn't take advantage of the Optus debacle as much as they should have. They've actually shelved their big promise of selling down some of their core assets to unlock some value for shareholders. They don't have a presence in data centers. They're actually a user of data centers, so they're missing out really on that. So they're relying on mobile and to a lesser degree cloud to offset the decline in some of their other areas. And it's 20 times earnings. For me, that seems expensive, given there really aren't that many genuine growth drivers or transformation drivers at this point. So it's a little bit of a value trap. At 365, it probably is a genuine hold. You might get 10, 20 cents just on it, trending back to, I guess, a long-term market, $4. Not really a reason to buy, and it's not paying big chunky dividends like it used to. So it's hard to get excited. We're weighing between the two. If I'm looking for total shareholder return, albeit a much smaller company, I like ABB.
Yeah, okay. So there you go. Not a ringing endorsement for Telstra, but yeah, a true hold. Value trap, I haven't heard that in a while. But yeah, we'll put that as a note. What do you make of Telstra, Josh? Because if I look, I mean, Morgan's does have a hold on it. Bell Potter's upgraded it to a buy, outperform buy, overweight from Morgan Stanley. How about at RiverX?
Probably on any time frame where we'd look to rotate from Telstra to Aussie Broadband. Obviously, picking up market share. Telstra's revenues, they grew last year at 1%. So still under even the inflation figures, you know, better sort of customer service over at Broadband as well. So they're going to continue to pick up market share. The one area they're doing okay in is the mobile phone segment. So that's about 6% growth. Again, sort of okay. Sort of not really focusing on huge growth, and they're actually more so focusing on cost structures. They've got the infrastructure, which is also a double-edged sword, because they've got that such high costs to sort of maintain that as well. The one thing that's somewhat interesting about Telstra is they are rolling out the Starlink, which is the telco.
The Elon Musk.
Exactly. So that's actually a pretty cool area that they're rolling out, and they're giving Aussies access to that. So, you know, maybe that just, I think they just started selling that in March from the report.
What's the big benefit? I mean, you may or may not know. I don't know.
A bit of an anecdotal thing, but clients traveling in caravans and things like that at the moment, they just add that on, and they've got reception anywhere.
Right.
So you don't need cables when you're hooked up to the satellite, okay, clearly, and it's a lot faster than what the NBN would be.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay. So you would be selling Telstra then?
Sell Telstra, buy Aussie Broadband.
Okay, there you go. Can I just take a little bit of a detour because it's come up so much and you name dropped data centers. Are you really positive on the thematic? Correct me if I'm wrong, but like 10 years ago, you were positive on XDC, weren't you?
I was, and it was always expensive along the way. And here we are, it's finally making money. They've just raised $1.3 billion. We've got an aspirational of $40 in 3 or 4 years' time. So,
positive on that theme.
It is, because at the moment, the data centers and the storage, we're talking about big, large language models. The storage is those magnificent seven, but we're going to see it broaden into other sectors, other industries over the next 5 years. So the demand is only going one way, which is higher. So you still need to have that picks and shovels approach. You don't have to try and pick which company's going to win. Just be in the storage game and you'll do quite well. Just have a look at Macquarie and their AirTree Ventures that they have on the block at $15
billion. Yeah, right. And you guys, do you look to incorporate that data center thematic into portfolios somewhere? Some way, shape, or form?
I think anything related to the sort of infrastructure around that, so whether it's microchips or whether it's the data centers, you know, AI is going to bring a lot of extra data that's going to need to be stored. We're severely undersupplied at the moment. It's going to be a pretty strong thematic over the next 5-10 years.
Yeah, okay. Let's just leave that there. I had to ask though, because we do get a lot of viewer questions as well. For Tim, let's talk Evolution. So Evolution, gold and some copper in there. Copper is used in data centers. And the guys in the investment committee sold out of this one because, you know, cyclical stock. Mm. You know, the price has done well lately. Gold price has done really well. Copper price still doing very well. And so they just sort of thought, you know, take money off the table, you know, when we're at the peak of the cycle. What do you think, Chris?
I don't mind Evolution. Again, you look at the history over the last 10 years. They have a history of taking on assets and really squeezing most of the juice out of them. Now, the market thought they paid too much for North Parks. They really saw that drop there in January as a consequence. Pretty scary drop, actually. Hope you could base jump off that. At 379, it's really about the copper credits that really make it one of the lowest cost producers of gold. It's clearly a huge amount of global buying happening in gold. So as a fairly defensive proxy, where you've got that copper thematic, which everyone's talking about, and that gold as a bit of a defensive hedge against debasing currencies, inflation and global buying, I don't mind them at these levels. Notwithstanding, they've had a pretty good run. I don't think you have to own them. But for people looking at them, I think they're pretty fairly valued. If you want pure gold, I still like Newmont. Go for the biggest. They've got a huge geographically diverse collection of gold assets with some copper. And if you want a little junior wannabe in the copper space, have a look at Firefly Minerals. They've got a very, very interesting asset in Canada. And they're going to spend this year just adding high quality copper tons to it. So there's probably some alternatives, but I actually don't mind Evolution. I think you can back this management to deliver as they have on their other six assets.
Okay, so that's a buy today.
Yes.
Got it. Thank you. Josh, does the copper gold, you know, the mix appeal when it comes to Evolution for you?
Yeah, it does on the relative valuation. So, I mean, here in Australia, we don't have too many options in terms of copper. Obviously, BHP is in the headlines at the moment. But we've got Sandfire as the largest pure play. It's 35% at the moment above its all-time highs. So you're perhaps not going out and buying that one right at the minute. And the smaller copper plays, probably more so here in Australia, have had some troubles with their mines with weather and you know, labor issues. So there's sort of a little bit high risk. I think this sits perfectly in the middle. You've also got the high gold price that's going to have some certainty flowing through for the balance sheet of Evolution Mining. It does seem roughly sort of at the top of a very short-term range for the time being and selling off on a couple of reports. So you might be able to get this a little bit cheaper, but I don't think you'd be too fussy. You're sort of buying it more of an investment. Getting exposure to those two commodities at a decent relative valuation anyway.
That's a buy?
Yeah, sure.
Put it to the investment committee again, see if they made a mistake. Can I just again digress? I think it's because it's been so long since we caught up. I'm sure. Just curious, what is sort of exciting you, in case I forget to ask later, in terms of commodities? I know that you do a lot of work in that space. You know, is it lithium? Is it copper? Is it graphite? Is it something else?
At the moment, it's hard to go past copper because of the irreplaceable nature of it. It's the core of the transition away from a high carbon to a low carbon economy. And we're just beginning. You only have to look at the big players like BHP to show where they want to be. They want to be in copper. So uranium as well is an interesting one as part of having clean energy. We've seen the ban come out of exports of certain uranium-based commodities out of Russia. And we're just beginning. The price, I think, can go a lot higher, probably spike to $150. It's about at 90 today, so there's still upside in the uranium price. So they're probably the two that I can see. Rare earths as well seems to be coming off the bottom. They're going to be important for the super magnets that are part of generating energy in both vehicles, electric vehicles, and big wind turbines, etc. So have a look at some of the better rare earth plays. There seems to be some action there in WA with some government announcements today on critical minerals. There's a lot going on in Brazil with some high-grade deposits there as well. So that's probably the little sleeper, if you like, that was the poor cousin of lithium. And then even lithium, we've seen a bottoming happening in the last 3 or 4 months. Hard to go past Pilbara Minerals because of their cash flow. That'd be a nice little slot in for Rio if they want to buy something as well, being up there in the Pilbara. So Arcadium as well has been sold off. There's probably some value there as well.
Thanks, Chris. Glad I asked. I'm sure our viewers are as well. In Pilbara, I didn't have time to read it this morning, but just as a heads up for our viewers, they did come out with a quarterly update today. And yeah, we'll see what the detail is. But Chris, you also set us up really nicely for our third stock, which is Silex System. This has been picked by Angie. Angie didn't give us context, but I'm wondering if this is on the list because we have seen a lot of interest in uranium plays. We have seen, you know, some big moves for the likes of, you know, Boss Energy and the rest of it. Silex is related to uranium, but it's more related to the whole sort of nuclear transition, correct? It's looking to commercialize some sort of a process.
Yeah. It does trade very similar to those. I mean, we've sort of got the three on our market, Paladin, Boss, and Silex, and the correlation would probably be in the high 90s. Really trading off that, I guess, around the share, the underlying commodity price too, but it's more related to sort of that US policy that's really coming through. And they seem to have some good partnerships. One of their main JVs is with Cameco, which is the largest traded uranium company. Their main project being the global laser enrichment. So they're more in, sort of the processing almost and the technology around that. I guess the question comes is a $1.4 billion market cap justified for this, especially given they only have about a 51% holding in that JV. We would prefer Boss Energy, just given that they're starting to write receipts, similar strategy to what we did maybe 12, 24 months ago with Pilbara being the producer and the writing the revenues and making money while the price is high. We'll probably see a similar thing if the uranium price ever does peel off and experience a flat to down market like we've seen in lithium. At least you've got Boss Energy that's writing receipts while the times are good. So I think they're obviously going to trade very similar, like I mentioned at the start, but we prefer Boss just being a little bit more investment grade with those revenues coming through.
Okay, if you were in Silex already, again, I don't know if Angie is, would you just hold it because there is the promise of this technology being adopted and commercialized?
Yeah, both a hold for the time being. I think the price is obviously really extended for the time being on probably both of them. We were fortunate enough to accumulate a little bit of Boss on the pullback, and I think that's the type of stocks that these are. You want to be buying them on pullbacks or healthy pullbacks rather than buying them at the top each time.
Agree, disagree?
I agree probably 100% on that. Really? I would prefer Boss Energy at the moment as they continue to ramp up production. They get the benefit of that continued upswing in uranium prices we believe are coming through. Silex, I really hope she's owned it for a long time. She'd be a very happy Vegemite.
Yeah.
And I think it can go further. They are one of the key technologies for the next generation of nuclear reactors as well as we're bringing them on stream. So probably more to come, but hard to buy after that run and the recent spike as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, again, for our viewers, this is information only. This is not personal financial advice. You really need to take all of your own circumstances into consideration, of course. And that, you know, it's strategy, right? Like when you're constructing a portfolio, you've got to be thinking about, price you're paying, price you sell, mm-hmm. and everything else. It's not just like the story sure. and hop on board. Okay, so that being said, and getting that disclaimer out of the way, the next one on the list is Eleanor Investors Group. And this one's been picked by Liam. And I thought Liam gave us a bit of context, but possibly not. Now, are you familiar with this company, Chris?
I wasn't familiar, but yeah. I've had a good look at it today. And mm-hmm. I guess the challenge for them is they've got a small funds management business and they do small scale investments. They've been focusing for a number of years in the tourism space, in some of the office space, healthcare space, retail space. They've been those areas that have really struggled post-COVID and with higher interest rates, lower rental yields. And for me, their small scale being a couple of hundred million market cap, so it's hard for them to get that lower cost of funding, getting access to high quality properties, if you like. And that's a pretty tough looking chart. I mean, again, you could look at the value proposition, but there's no reason to buy it on that chart alone. I'd be sticking at the bigger end of town. I like Centuria Industrial Property, pays a better yield as well. And I quite like Health Co. Mm-hmm. Wellness Group. Again, much better yield and 99% occupancy. They're playing in that health space. A lot of good quality tenants as well. So really, in that space, while we're waiting for a bit of a recovery, if you like, and interest rates high for longer is not going to help this space either. So I'd probably steer clear, unfortunately, until yeah. we see a real turn in the performance of the stock, probably over two quarters of improved returns and a big bottoming of that share price as well before I venture in.
Got it. So we'll avoid that one. What do you make of Eleanor Investor Group?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a difficult business to understand. Obviously, in real estate, they're a fund manager in the real estate sector, but they also co-invest alongside their funds as well. So there's their investments that they do raise from externally as well. So they're sort of getting hit. Obviously, as you can see, you're getting hit quite hard on a couple of fronts. There's the leverage within the products, and then there's also leverage on just the business itself. They do hold about $180 million worth of value as a co-investment from all of their properties. The market cap's around 175 mil, so it is probably early in the chart for us to step into this one at this stage, but you'd near wager that sort of holds up around these levels, given they sort of got that. Recently acquired Challengers Real Estate Funds Management business. So they're managing about 6.3 bill worth of property, and it's, you know, you're sort of thinking of it almost like a real estate stock, but you're also thinking of it like a fund manager as well. So the more fund that they manage, the fees that they generate on that, and it is growing. The fund that they're accumulating is growing.
Always been told, like, follow the funds, you know, if their funds under management are growing, then that's a positive.
Yeah, which is the case here. They're just getting hurt by probably those leverage factors at the moment. So I'd keep it on the watch list if you're really interested in this type of business. I don't think it's probably going to fall too much, and yeah, maybe we'll start to see that bottom out. It's not going to change the story too much while the interest rates stay at the current levels, but when those interest rates start to come off, it's going to get more and more attractive.
Okay, so I'll say if you're in it, hold it, but you wouldn't be buying it at all today.
Yeah.
You mentioned Centuria Industrial Property. So is that your pick over Goodman Group? Everybody seems to love Goodman Group.
Well, Goodman Group, another upgrade today. Yeah. I mean, we talk about data centers. They survived the GFC, one of the key players that did. They are a global player. You've got a back management. They pivoted to data center build, own, operate a couple of years ago, and they've doubled down on that. So it's hard to knock Goodman the way they're executing. It's also hard to buy at these levels as well. So I think you're just getting a weight of money looking for a position in that space. So from a value proposition, it's probably hard to buy. But again, I think it's going to be a market darling for the foreseeable future. So.
Yeah, quality
good
stock.
Reason.
Yeah, definitely.
Worth paying up for quality stock?
Yes, but it's probably, you know, you probably missed the boat a little bit on that one, I'd say.
Yeah, all right. So that is Elanor Investment Group. Okay, let's get to the last on this list, at least until we get to the break, and that's for Ryan, and this is Camplify. So we know what Camplify is. It's sort of a marketplace for, you know, the rental and sharing of camper vans. You know, really hot in COVID. Mm. It's one of those companies that, you know, loss-making still. So whether or not you're willing to invest in Camplify, what do you think?
It's a bit niche, but I mean, the numbers that they've come out with since IPO have been strong. Market cap of around 100 mil, so probably on the small side for us. But, you know, it IPO'd in 2021, did 500%, and it's come all the way back down. So, you know, obviously the valuations are pretty stretched there, well, were at one stage anyway. But yeah, they're still growing revenues really quite strongly. They've had a revenue increase of 93%, and the three-year average is 98%. And they're expanding globally, you know, expanding into other products and services such as insurance. So I don't see any particular red flags around this company.
Except for maybe the chart.
Yeah, apart from, well, I guess somewhat of a victim of its own success, I guess, with that IPO price and living up to, you know, that was a very hot market, that 2021 for IPOs.
Yeah, money was quite well. Money was not costing very much, was it?
The amount of charts that you'll see that IPO'd in 2021 that look exactly like that, it's sort of uncanny. Every company that listed in 2021 almost got onto a great start, and they've all experienced that pretty big pullback. But it's about how the company is going and the underlying. And yeah, they seem to be kicking goals. They did experience a decrease in their price per bookings due to something else that they bought out. I'm not too familiar with this business in itself. It's probably a little bit too niche for us to delve into, but I'd have it as a hold. I think it's doing some good things in its own area.
Camplify.
Yes. Airbnb for the grey nomads.
Yeah, I guess so.
Look, I like this business because I like the way the management executes. It really is a scalable proposition. It's utilizing resources out there with people's RVs and the like. And they have a history of executing. So it's for the patient. I think you'd be prepared to hold it for 2 or 3 years. I think within 2 years, it'll be making money. And I think you're going to get a big inflection point with these stocks. Call it an online marketplace stock. Airtasker is a good example, also executing. So if you're happy to hold these in a bucket for 2 years, I think they'll do very, very well. They're also sort of tourism travel oriented, and we've seen those headwinds short term. But I think in the medium term, as we get a leveling out of cost of living pressures, we're going to see more travel globally. And these guys are well positioned in some of those key travel markets like Europe, New Zealand and Australia. They already have good footprints, they make good acquisitions, and now it's about monetizing that. So for now, I'm happy to hold it. And really at these prices, it looks pretty compelling if you can take that risk. And willing to be patient for 12 months from $1.50 to $2 is a great shareholder return. So for Ryan, I'd look at it strongly. And if you're prepared to take the weight and a little bit of risk, there's probably some value there for you.
Yeah, right. Okay, so I will officially put a hold on that for today, but with that caveat that, you know, if you have the nerve and you've got the ability, that it wouldn't be a bad specky buy. Can we call it that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, got it. Thank you. All right, guys, wet your whistles, take a break. Let's run through what we've learned so far. For those of you who just take the shorthand on it. All right, it is a buy for our stock of the day, Aussie Broadband. Look, Chris points out that it's gaining market share. And Josh as well says that it looks like the NBN has a lot of upside to come. Now, when we get to Telstra, though, different story. Josh would be selling it. He said sort of any day of the week, any time frame, he'd be rotating out of Aussie Broadband into Telstra. And Chris calls Telstra a value trap. He said, you know, hold it if you need to, but he really says, where's the growth? Like, it's got a little, still a bit of defensive qualities, but where's the growth? Let's go to Evolution. Now, it is a buy for my guest, Chris McDonald's from Morgan's, but he would prefer Newmont for a pure gold play. And if you're looking for pure copper, he suggested Firefly Minerals, but, you know, just given a defensive proxy of gold, gold is a defensive hedge against currency devaluation. You've got copper really going strong. Evolution is a buy, and it's a buy for Josh as well. Okay, so two buys. Silex, it is a hold for Josh. Both of my guests would prefer to invest in BOE, but admit that it's hard to buy either of those companies up at these prices because they've had such a run. Eleanor Investors Group, you heard what they had to say about that one. It's an avoid for Chris. It's a hold if you're in it for Josh, but he said otherwise, just have it on your watch list if that's the type of investment that you like. And you just heard what the guys had to say about Camplify. So actually, overall, pretty positive, although officially it was a hold for both of their calls. All right, you know the rules. We've got this fantasy portfolio or a high conviction fund that is picked by our investment committee, comprised of Henry Jennings from Marcus Today, Ben Clark from TMS Capital, and Nathan Somasundaram from Deep Data Analytics. So we just put up the most recent episode onto ausbiz.com.au. So let's check in with the updates. Going into May, big changes. The committee sold Domino's, it sold Santos, and it sold out of Evolution Mining, as I said, but it added Southern Cross Electrical, and it added Sonic Healthcare. It added Aristocrat Leisure. Now, ResMed was trimmed by 1%, Premier by 1.5%, and they lifted the cash component to 5% from 2%. So they wanted a little bit of dry powder just for what's to come in the next few months. So, with all of those big changes being made, let's see how the the portfolio is performing. Pretty good. So up around 32% on a cumulative return basis since its inception on March the 1st of 2022. So thank you so much for sending in all of your requests to this program. When we get a double buy, which we have had twice today, we send it to the investment committee and they discuss it, whether or not to put it back in the portfolio, add to the position, what have you. And likewise, if there's a company that's in there that is sold on this program, we make sure they talk about that in detail as well. So I really do encourage you to get to our website, ausbiz.com.au, and you can look for the investment committee under the top tab series, or, you know, in editor's pick. It'll be there, obviously, in a couple of different forms. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it. Okay, in this next half hour of the program, we'll be talking about Center Group. We'll be talking about the big miner Rio Tinto, Gold Hydrogen, which I will need some explanation, MaxiPart. So that's in the truck parts business, which I think is interesting because it's a totally different ballgame, I suppose, from Bapcor, which was such a downgrade last week, and Prophecy International. For some reason, we get a lot of viewers asking about Prophecy International. I know we've put it to the small cap guys on a Friday, so I thought we'd do it on this program once again today to get a different view, or maybe the same ultimate outcome, but just to get some insights further into it for you. But first up, Center Group. This has been picked by Lily. Chris McDonald from Morgan's Financial is here with us, and Joshua Barker from RiverX. But I'll start with you, Chris, on this one, because entertainment destinations is what we're calling these Westfield shopping centers in Australia now. Do you buy it?
Do I buy it? It is exposed to retail, and really they're relying on the ability to have full occupancy to manage their debt levels and to increase rents. And I think at the moment, it's a little bit tricky for them to do that. You can't do all of them unless you've got falling interest rates and very strong retail conditions. Remember that the RBA is deliberately trying to slow down discretionary spending, and we're seeing that effect start to go through. So we've got a headwind for Center Group in those core earnings. And if we're looking at a return on shareholder value, I think it's really hard to push into the wind for the next 12 months. Because that is deliberately what the settings are trying to do. If we look at their ability to perform in difficult markets, you want to buy the best. Westfield is a destination, so it's those small strip malls that are really struggling, individual online retailers as well. So I don't mind it as a business. It's a definite hold for me. But again, I think if you're going to play in that space, we touched on some of those growth areas. I think industrial property's got more of a growth area if you're managing it. Or even some of that aged healthcare and healthcare space. I just think there's more positive drivers than owning a lot of retail space effectively that you're trying to rent out. So definite hold for me, very well managed as a group. It is the best of the best in Australia, but you know they're pushing into the wind. I'd rather see a definite turn in both retail sales and interest rates pointing to the downside before I'd be happy to put people into it.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So Center Group, it you know, it's impossible to have a conversation over an hour about stocks without talking about interest rates, right? And and we now know that it's a higher for longer scenario here in Australia, likely overseas as well.
Yeah, shopping centers exposure has been a little bit slower of the sectors in the REITs, but probably just ahead of offices has been the only one that's been worse. But we're starting to see it now. We are starting to see a bit of that recovery come through. And if you're looking around and you're saying, okay, well, obviously industrial has been the best and held up the best. You've got Goodman Group trading, 30, 40% up for the year. So they own, a lot of the really quality Westfields around Australia. In fact, we're doing a co-investment on one of the largest Westfields. And, part of the reasons why we like that is it offers a lot of fairly defensive investments in nature. So a lot of these Westfields have, the supermarkets, they have the chemists, they have a lot of non-discretionary tenants within that as well. A lot of retail, of course, but we're seeing retail hold up quite well, as we saw with the February reporting season. It was just the last month or so that optimism has been a little bit dampened by further rate hikes, which never came. So I think overall, long term, that the trend is with us. We're looking at for that asset in particular, over a 99% tenancy rate.
Are you
rate.
Doing a plug here, Joshua?
Yeah, well, we'll hopefully share it with a few people.
Okay.
But and they have a 99% tenancy rate in their overall portfolio as well. So I'd be happy to sort of delve into Centre Group or one of their projects too.
There you go.
I'll let you get away with it this time. All right, so that is a buy for Centre Group coming from Joshua Barker and the team at RiverX. All right, now let's get to the seventh stock on the list, and this is Rio Tinto, picked by Tony. We don't often get questions coming in about the big miners, I think, because we talk about them so much. But considering we did have the AGM last week, maybe that's why Tony wrote in about it, and also just this real push for copper, whereas iron ore, the price is still quite high and iron ore is still dominant when it comes to Rio Tinto. So I guess talk to me about the company and whether you're happy with the mix that it has right now or whether you could anticipate Rio Tinto also sort of maybe, pulling a BHP and trying to expand out a bit.
It's interesting. They're not happy with the mix. If you look at their future vision, it is about upping green aluminium, for example, and utilizing cheap power out of Canada to bring it down into the US. They're talking about ramping up copper, as we've seen. They've got into lithium now. So they want to diversify away from Rio on the one from iron ore. But on the other hand, they're about to hopefully commission next year Simandou and Guinea, which will have very high quality, high grade, low cost iron ore, which perversely will probably put pressure on the iron ore market. So it's a tricky one for me. I think it's fully priced. It's a high quality business. We see it in a lot of portfolios. They've got great free cash flow. But if I'm picking between the two, notwithstanding BHP's in the middle of a potential scrip takeover of Anglo, I'd prefer BHP's mix and its commitment to copper, because I think copper gets you there faster. They also have the potash play, which I think also is a sleeper as well. So for me, I prefer the current mix of BHP, and for Rio, expansion in places like Mongolia for copper and some of their other assets is a little bit trickier. BHP's also made that move into Oz Minerals again for the main reason to up their copper. So I don't mind Rio Tinto. We've got a hold around these levels and it'll pay you to hold them with pretty good dividends. If iron ore stays up like it is, you'll get a special dividend. So there's every reason to hold it for Tony, but just hard to get excited to buy at these levels if you're going to play that one big diversified stock in Australia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Do you see it any differently, Josh?
No, we're leaning that way as well. Rio's actually sort of snuck up to its all-time highs while everyone's been focused on the BHP buyout, hasn't it?
Yeah, so, and iron ore's been doing quite well.
Yeah, exactly. So, look, longer term, we do prefer that copper exposure that BHP. The sort of weakness has come in the share price with that buyout and a lot of uncertainty there. Rio is about 3% off all-time highs, whereas BHP is 15. You don't see that gap in these two too often. Quite significant. probably a little bit more room to go for Rio to outperform BHP. It's actually trading on a quite low PE compared to BHP still, even at these prices. So I think the Rio's 14 and BHP's 19. But I would be looking to do that swap over to BHP eventually, especially if, you know, this is purely just speculation, but especially if Rio does start putting its bid in for Anglo, potentially. Mm. You know, you're going to see that same weakness that we've seen from BHP. It's not there yet, and it might never happen, but it's definitely a little risk. And I'd be happy to take some profits off the table in Rio while it's at all-time highs and rotate into something like BHP.
So we're going to sell. Yeah. I think I had a conversation with somebody yesterday saying $40 for BHP would be a really good sort of entry point. Yeah.
Mm. Oh, of course.
Yeah, of course, we'll get there. We'll see what happens with Anglo. As always, the conversation around BHP, I suppose, until we see some sort of resolution on that front. All right, the eighth stock on the list is Gold Hydrogen, and this has been picked by Oliver. I, you know, did my cursory sort of look Googling as to what Gold Hydrogen is. Chris, I'll start with you. Can you enlighten me?
So Gold Hydrogen listed about a year and a half ago off the back of some old drill holes, but in South Australia, people were looking for oil and gas and they found this weird gas called hydrogen gushing out of the ground. The Hindenburg had happened, probably not what people wanted back in the day. Fast forward 80, 90 years and hydrogen's very much the talk of the town.
Yes.
Helium, which is used for another number of industrial purposes. So they went back and drilled it last year. Lo and behold, it's chock full of hydrogen and helium gushing out of the ground. What markets like, what the big players like, is you don't have to spend billions of dollars of power electrolyzers infrastructure to try and split hydrogen, like water, for example, or biomass into hydrogen. Mm-hmm. The hydrogen comes out of the ground.
So it's coming out of the ground.
Like a normal gas well. So for a cost of per kilo of hydrogen, we might be talking 50 cents to a dollar instead of $4 or $5. So it's a bit of a game changer. We are waiting on more drilling results and data, but the market's clearly liking. Of course, it's very topical. We're seeing the Albanese government, after 2 years, finally committing to the hydrogen industry. That'll be out in the budget next week. And they're performing on the share market. They've had a lovely rally in the last few months again. And if they can perform in further data and results and well holes, I'd expect one of the big players, global players in the oil and gas space to come and buy them out.
So M&A possibility, do they have a, are they already sort of commercializing the helium? Because that's in very short supply.
It is, and it will take some time for them to commercialize. They could do a pilot plant quite quickly. There is another small company maybe a year behind them called Hyterra. HYT, they're based in the US and Kansas. They're looking to do a very similar thing, drill some well holes in the next 3 or 4 months. Much smaller market cap. So for people who missed out on Gold Hydrogen, have a look at that. Much earlier, so it is riskier. It's not for everyone. But this space is very topical because globally, and you've seen the commitment in Germany, there will be hydrogen as part of the mix moving forward, whether it's for transport, whether it's for baseload power replacing gas-fired power stations. It does have a role to play, and I think we're seeing that at a government level.
Interesting, because we do get a lot of questions about Hazer Group, for one, because they're looking to use the processes to create hydrogen. But this has surprised me a little bit because its share price is at $1.66, you know, which is not... it's compared to some other very early stage companies. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's quite good, and it's been up by more than 100% year to date, 372 over the past year. So you would buy this today still?
Well, today, look, really do your research on it. I think it's a great play if you want to get exposure to hydrogen. They've de-risked it to a certain degree because the first two well holes showed world-class hydrogen and helium. They do have to get it out of the ground, commercialize it, develop the infrastructure, the gas pipeline. So it's a big boy's game. But certainly it's very, very interesting, and it's got South Australian government backing. You'd expect it'll get federal government assistance. And a lot of the big players are trying to move away from oil and gas into the next big liquid, and that's liquid hydrogen and ammonia. So it will get interest as these results continue to develop.
Interesting. Okay, market cap at 127 million, call it that. So has this been on your radar at all?
I'd heard about the story, but no, unfortunately not on the radar. It's interesting. It definitely seems like a great prospect. You know, the Australian landscape's great. You know, anything that they sort of need at that topical time, it turns out is under our feet. So it's a really strong discovery, and we're seeing that in the share price too. You know, without getting, I think Chris covered it really well with the sort of technology. Looking at the business, obviously it's a fresh one on the market. I think it's been on for about 7 quarters basically. And they laid out a 2-year plan when they did IPO. And what I like to look at with these, you know, fresh companies is, did they live up to, or did they stick to their word on their prospectus, which is sometimes rare, sometimes not. But yeah, they seem to have done that in terms of the budget for what they've looked to expand on, and obviously the drill results too. They sort of were looking at around $20 million outlined to spend. They've only used about 15 of that with only a quarter left. So they're going to come in under budget and, you know, within that time frame and showing good results. They're also well funded. So they've got around $20 million cash still remaining in a term deposit. So yeah, I'd have this as a hold for the time being.
Hold. We're calling it a specky buy for you?
Yes.
Yep, got it. All right. That's an interesting one. I just made a note to the team that we'll call the company and try to get them in just to learn a little bit more about what they're doing. So thanks for that, guys. The next one on the list is Maxi Parts. This has been picked by Nick. I've talked to the guys at NAS Asset Management about this one in the past. So it is truck parts, but like the big, you know, big truck. What do we call them? What are the big trucks called? I'm having a blank, you know, like the transport trucks. There you go, yeah. The transport trailers. And the road trains and all those. That's the word that I was looking for. So, I think a fun fact was that in Australia, we keep these trucks on the road longer than, you know, say in the States, comparatively speaking, because we replace the parts rather than replacing the truck. So this is obviously a small cap. But Josh, and any interest there after doing your research?
It seems like a fairly strong business. Nothing really jumps out at me too much for us to sort of delve down the market cap in this one. They're about 130 mil, I believe, which is, you know, probably on the smaller end for us. But I think they were reluctant to give guidance, which was probably a slight concern for me looking to sort of price in how this company is going to do in the future. They spoke about sort of low double-digit growth across some of the key metrics, but a lot of uncertainty. Maybe in the long term, like you mentioned, you've got that sort of underlying bid with Australia just being such a large country that we do use a lot of those transport trucks. You know, I know you said it's different to Babcorp, but it does concern me, that sort of price action there. You know, nothing sort of jumping out at me on the chart there. You probably need to know it a little bit better than what I do for Maxi Parts. But I'd have as a hold, I think it's a fairly good business, just on the bit too smaller end, a niche part of the town for us anyway.
Yeah, and should be said as well that they've been buying up sort of smaller operators. So there's a bit of an M&A strategy there as well. Chris, are you familiar with it, or what do you think?
I wasn't familiar with it. I've been watching, fortunately, with interest, not with shareholders and clients, with Babcorp. What's happened there? I think at some point, if you're willing to be very brave, there may be a buy in that in the next 3 to 6 months. As we turn around again, people are going to spend a bit more money on their vehicles. It is a tricky one, though, Maxi Parts. They're growing through acquisition. And that trend, I look at the share price, it's been gentle but sustainable downtrend. So there's really no pivot point. They probably can't charge more in this market, so they don't have pricing power. It's probably fairly competitive as well in that space as well. So you can't really leap out and, you know, increase prices by 30% to really start to turn around those earnings because someone coming in and undercut you. So I think it's a very difficult industry. There is a stock that just listed that we really like called Tasmea. So instead of in the parts, and to service big trucks, they just do the service of critical infrastructure and mining equipment. So they go out and make sure that plants keep running, so they keep making money. Or in the case of water boards, if there's a burst water main or something goes down, they fix and repair that very, very quickly, so we still get our water and our clean showers. So Tasmea, more of a capital light business. They've got long-term service agreements, they've got good margins, and they pay a pretty good dividend starting in the next few days. So have a look at that one if you want to play in I guess the service space.
Mm-hmm.
Because they got tier one companies with long-term contracts and they get paid every time they send someone out. So it's a little bit less risky, if you like, with less pricing pressure.
Learned a new thing already. Okay, so Tasmea, T-E-A is the ticker
Correct.
Code there. So do you guys at RiverX, do you have any aversion to the smaller end of the market right now?
To be honest, it does sort of concern us with, you know, I guess it depends on your definition of the smaller end of town. You know, some people play in the micro caps, you know,
some people say anything under the 300 is a small cap, but
yeah, we'd probably class around 300 mil as being a smaller cap. So, that's probably the cutoff around 200 mil, unless it's, you know, really jumping out at us or in a really high growth area, potentially. The other exception to the rule is maybe how long the business has been around as well. So, you know, newer businesses have higher risk when they're a lot smaller as well. If they've got really consistent earnings, if they've got really consistent revenues coming through, it's sort of a different story to, you know, a new company that's just started a year ago.
So I've made you do your research with some of these companies then today.
Yes,
All right, let's go to Prophecy International. And this has been picked by Annika. So Prophecy is P-R-O, it's in the technology space. It's developed software used by large and complex international organizations. So that's what it says on its website.
Yeah.
Do you know the company?
Yeah, well, I do as of today. So from my understanding, they have sort of two
parts.
Well,
you haven't been doing your research over the past, 3 days? I'm kidding.
No, a bit of a crammer. So they basically have two sort of products. One is in the customer service automation, it seems, and adding that on, and the other is in the cybersecurity area. So that's their two main products that they're partnering with some fairly decent clients. Again, this is a good example of what I was talking about. It's only a $60 million market cap, but it's been around for a long time. The company started in 79. Listed on the market in 97. It's got reoccurring revenues, it's got no debt, cash in the bank. It's running at a net loss, but only around $1 million, given that it's got $10 million in the bank account, I wouldn't be too concerned. So whilst it is a small business, it's sort of a long-standing business that's been around for a long time with, you know, very large clients. It's not trying to do anything overly new, and it seems they've got a pretty good solution if their clients keep coming back to get those recurring revenues. So this one we'd have as a spec buy.
Wow. Okay. We got a spec buy. There you go. I'm glad I asked. Prophecy International.
Again. A nice little diamond just hidden there down the bottom. So thank you, Annika.
Especially for a tech company, no debt.
It is. Yeah. We're at that beautiful pivot point for a small business where they seem to be winning quite large clients on decent terms. They've got good rising annual recurring revenue. They're going to move to cash flow positive in the next 3 to 6 months. They've got $12 million in the bank. They're growing 30% year on year. And they're at 60 million market cap or an EV of 50. So they're in a pretty sexy space in cybersecurity. So they identify threats in real time and let the organization know, hey, there's a potential breach. And they're doing cool things with chatbots and other things to improve the customer experience. So two topical areas around security and AI, and they're winning business. They've reaffirmed guidance and they're going to be making money. So I think they're a great little business. I'd be buying it.
There we go. We've got a buy to end this program on a tech company, no less. So potentially a way to add some growth to the portfolio going mm-hmm. forward. Guys, believe it or not, that brings us to the end. I'll just recap what we've learned. Center Group, bit of a disagreement here. Difficult environment. Hard to push into the winds is the quote coming from Chris. So it's a hold for him. He does prefer industrial property. Josh would be buying this one. Rio Tinto, it's a sell for Josh. He'd be selling up around these record highs and buying BHP instead. It's a hold for Chris. Solid company, you know, looking to expand its operations. Prefers BHP, but he would be holding Rio Tinto. Got a good dividend as well. Gold Hydrogen, this is one that was an interesting one. Specky buy for Chris. You heard a lot of his reasoning, but also because it's got government backing at both the state and federal level, potentially. And look, Josh says, sticks to its prospectus. It looks good. It's had a big run. He'd hold it here. Maxi Parts, it's a hold for Josh. It is a bit of a question over the next catalyst for Chris for Maxi Parts, but he did name Tasmea, T-E-A, as his preferred pick in that rough sort of area. So I think that would be a hold if you had it, or would you sell it?
I'd be a hold here. Okay, I think they can grow from here, but it's going to be tough time.
Okay. All right. And Prophecy, we've got a double buy from our guests to end the program for you, Annika. So thank you for all of your suggestions. And thank you, Chris McDonald from Morgan's Financial, for coming in. It was good to see you. And Josh Barker from RiverX, as always, great to have you in. So that was a great show on this Wednesday, Hump Day. If you have any stocks you'd like us to cover, and just while we've been on air, we've had a few coming through, you can send them to ausbiz.co/callpicks. We'll get it up at the bottom of the screen. Look, we try to get to them as quickly as possible. We try to get the right stocks with the right guests. Sometimes we get it all right, sometimes a little bit wrong, but we really do appreciate you getting them all in to us. So thanks for watching. Don't go anywhere. We'll bring you some market news and analysis coming right up.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.